All right, friends, you know what that means. It's time once again, and none too soon either. I'm afraid my times keep getting spread out more and more on these intermittent podcasts due to the, as I'm jokingly calling it, as I always have, the John Lennon phenomena, which is life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans. So I'm just going to quit making excuses and just continue to apologize to my listening audience who's still out there for these sporadic podcasts, which I clearly intended to do more often, but just don't seem to get around to it due to one thing or another. Sort of like the old Roseanne then. It's always something, which on my Saturday Night Live favorite skits. Really, the first 5 or 6 or 7 years of that show were just, as far as I was concerned, phenomenal. Really launched some of the greatest careers of the talents of that day, as far as comedians are concerned. So if any of you were too young to see the original, or like me, haven't gotten it on a retro channel or looked at the VH1 retrospective or whatever, you need to go and check that stuff out. I mean, it's just priceless stuff, really is. Really amazing stuff. Any of you who are classic rock people, particularly if you are fans of CCR, you will have noticed that was sort of an obscure cut from one of their recordings. And it really has nothing to do with the topic I'm going to talk about today, except that it's one of my favorite songs and that CCR did. And it was off of their fourth recording, studio recording, which I think came out in late November 69. Just a very clever way that Fogerty uses the lyrics to talk about events of the day. So for those of you who aren't familiar with that song, go check it out. It's the, I believe it's the second song on the first side of the album for those vinyl freaks out there. And if you have the CD, it's the second song on the CD. So it's really very clever the way that Fogerty, the guitar player, lead guitarist, vocalist, sort of motivating man behind CCR, has interwoven popular politics and concerns of the day in the references in that song and even to famous newscasters of the day. So I don't want to spoil it for you, but if you're trivia freaks, go back and listen to that and then look up some of the names that they talk about. And I don't mean the famous Jody, quote-unquote, that seems to be Fogerty's favorite character to list in some of his songs, but some of the more political and newscaster references. It's really very, very, very clever. My hat is definitely off to him. And Fogerty continues to be one of my favorite solo guys to this day. Really, as far as I'm concerned, an under-recognized guitarist. So most of you, if you know that recording that the album / CD came from, most of you know that particular recording as the origins of the other songs that were much more popular, including Fortunate Son, which is one of my other all-time favorite CCR songs, and Down on the Corner. So those two were sort of the pick of the litter songs, if you will. And the other one was sort of a, I don't know what you would call it, a, you know, an underground hit, if you will, amongst folks who just were nerds like me, I guess. Or are like me, because I'm still a nerd and always was, and that's obviously not going to change anytime really soon. So I just thought it was kind of a cool riff to play, and it sounds really great on my Dr. Z amp that I have, which is, for those of you who don't know, is an independent amp maker out of Ohio who really does some really wonderful amplifiers. And if you don't believe me, listen to Brad Paisley, because he definitely likes them. And I think the original was probably played on Fogerty's PV, but who knows. And more than likely with a Rickenbacker, which he was using a lot back in the day, although at some point he switched to a Les Paul Nowadays, he has just about everything under the sun, from those to Telecasters to PRSs to you name it. He's got it. And, you know, if I was as good as Fogarty, I'd probably have a boatload of guitars too. So there you have it. At any rate, so we're back again to chat about a variety of topics. And something that's come up a lot with the folks with whom I work recently is this recurring theme that has to do with life and its many intricacies, and the fact that it unfolds and reveals itself to those who are conscious enough, if you will, to perceive it and brave enough to look at it in the face and analyze our own reactions to it in light of what we do in the moment, and regardless of how painful sometimes that is. I find that most people in our society are like to look outside of themselves for answers, whether it's to, you know, rock or rap people or athletes or religious figures or political figures or society in general. We tend to want to look outside of ourselves for the answers. And for some of us, that even, you know, goes so far as the famous Dow chemical motto, better living through chemistry. You know, as I hear a lot of these folks who are wanting to explore themselves, they use the lame-o excuse of doing hallucinogenics recreationally. Is, oh yeah, well, you know, those guys in, you know, in Peru and some of the Incas and some of the shaman of a variety of Native American tribes used to do that stuff to get off. And that's absolutely true. They did and they do. And I'm certainly not going to question their wisdom, but what I will say is you don't really need that stuff to do it, and you don't really need any of that stuff to mask the pain of looking at life. Because let's face it, friends and neighbors, it can be pretty flippin' painful. And most people choose not to look at their stuff. Most people like to look at other people, but they don't like to look at themselves very much. And one way that they escape and avoid is through some sort of addictive compulsive behavior, whether it's TV, you know, sports, food, sex, texting, porn, the internet, sugar, the most dangerous drug in the world, which I have pontificated upon countless times and won't bore your ears with another repontification of the most heinous drug on the planet as far as I'm concerned. Or, you know, more traditional, quote-unquote, drugs such as, you know, pot or alcohol or meth or whatever your substance of choice might be, or Xanax or Prozac or Paxil or whatever. And don't mishear me, I'm not suggesting that folks that don't absolutely 100% have to have those drugs because of some sort of, you know, organic brain foobar for which they are not responsible, but for which they were simply the unfortunate recipients upon in birth, which is rather a small population of that group that suffers from depression or anxiety or whatever. But nonetheless, there are folks who do come to the table with some wiring problems. You know, ADHD folks are a great example of that. My sleep disorder is a great example of that. You know, and so for some of those folks, you've got to do something to help the brain compensate for something that it just didn't come to the table with in terms of quote-unquote normal apparatus. Although my contention with most folks, or at least a large number of folks, is you can do that holistically without resorting to medication. And I think we certainly are a population that over-resorts to some sort of escape avoidance tool, or looks to some external agent to do our work for us, ergo what this workshop's about. And some of the folks that, or this podcast, excuse me, some of the folks that I work with who are really doing what I call high-level work, they're really doing more existential meaning of life, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, work in terms of some of their own stuff and sort of trying to get rid of some of the programming that they inherited from society, their parents, the school system, whatever, that they feel is erroneous in some regard and or no longer viable for them due to their life circumstances for a variety of reasons. You know, and it's like I tell everybody, you know, looking at asking yourself why you believe something or what are the origins of your beliefs is a pretty difficult thing to do. And, you know, some folks are better at it than others, and some folks need assistance, and some folks need a lot of assistance, and some folks just need to be prodded in the right direction. But whatever the scenario is, I think all of us have a capacity to look inside and to reconnect with what I have traditionally called over the years the spark, the person within, which you will see some more existential writings will, you know, talk about the God within. You know, and without wanting to get too spiritual, quote-unquote, religious-y, quote-unquote, on anyone listening to these podcasts, because despite the fact that I am an ordained minister, my goal in these podcasts is to give more secularly based emotional and cognitive and psychologically mental health based type commentary versus a spiritual one from a religious perspective. However, you know, it's as I tell most Judeo-Christians, you know, around and those folks who really, you know, like to quote the Bible and read passages, most of them, frankly, don't understand a flippin' thing they're reading, because if they did, they wouldn't make some of the inane comments they make. And it always amazes me how unaware so-called good Christians, Jews, Muslims, whatever, I'm not picking on any one particular religion here, because I think all religions have something to say that's relevant, but they also have their faux pas, if you will, in my personal opinion. But again, I'm not here to criticize anything. I'm just saying those who proclaim a lot to be the best, quote-unquote, you know, the Betty Bowerses of Christianity or Judaism or Taoism or whatever, I find most of those folks are completely clueless about why they believe what they believe and what the origins of that are and what the real implications are. And, you know, and one of the things that always amazes me, you know, as I talk about people trying to reconnect with the voice inside themselves, irrespective of their upbringing, of their religious training, because religion and spirituality are two completely different concepts. And I've known folks who were incredibly religious who didn't have a flipping clue what it meant to be spiritual. And sadly, that's my opinion of most quote-unquote religious people of any variety, brand, or secular, spiritual, quote-unquote, religious denomination. Ideally, of course, folks who are both spiritual and religious are, you know, to be envied and much sought after, but those folks are very few and far between. And if you had to pick between one or the other in terms of, well, you can be really spiritual, you can be really religious, the existential slash spiritual folks get my vote every day of the week, hands down. It's not even a competition at all. It's really not. But you know, for those folks who like to quote Bible phrases or, you know, Quran phrases or Torah phrases or whatever, you know, and they talk about all this crazy stuff, you know, and you know, some of it not so crazy, and I talk about, you know, getting reacquainted with the true you that comes from inside of you, the eerie existential you, the spiritual you, the you that's truth, if you will, with a capital T, apart from any societal, you know, programming. And societal includes religions, obviously, because religions are man-made and woman-made. They're not God-made. I'm sorry, they're just not. You know, they might be inspired, but, you know, humans are flawed, and they're going to turn anything crossways any which way they can. And any of you who know the Bible, for example, and the history of the Bible, which is, you know, due to the Council of Nicaea with a bunch of human people who are clearly flawed, you know, as we all are, being human, getting together, deciding which doctrines and chapters and verses are, quote-unquote, worthy to be put in the Bible and which are not, you know, which is, of course, led to the discovery of all these missing texts and these so-called hidden chapters and all these secret gospels and Gnostic gospels and all that. You know, that's because these people decided those things were too threatening for their power-hungry monger minds, which I think most religious people are, and that's my own opinion, so let me just say that out front. You know, I think most folks in that kind of position, kind of like a lot of politicians, and I'm not slamming anybody per se, you know, get caught up with power because we're human and we're foible. And, you know, if you look at the history of that, you know, why, ask yourself why the so-called Gospel of Mary was not included in the original Bible. Well, this man's, and just one guy's opinion, so it's just me, you know, look at what was going on at the time. You know, men were ruling the world, and, you know, God help us if we have a gospel from a woman. Oh, my Lord, that can't be happening, right? I mean, it's just ridiculous with some of the stuff that, in my personal opinion, some of the stuff that goes on. But, you know, it's these people that want to get close to themselves, and they're like, oh, you know, I don't know if I can trust myself, and I don't know if I can really connect with me, and I'm afraid to connect with the real me that's me. And I tell people, particularly those folks who are, you know, quote-unquote religious, I'm like, hello, if you're religious in a Judeo-Christian sort of manner, whatever your denomination or sect or whatever brand is, you know, you're all reading the same book. Did you forget about the part that said, you know, God was the Word and God spoke the Word and the Word became manifest and the Word was God and God was the Word? Well, if God spoke the Word and the Word is what created everything, that means you and me, that means we're all offspring of God. That means we all have the quote-unquote spark of the divine inside of us. So all you're really doing is reconnecting with God, irrespective of all the programmed BS that society has tried to put on you. And so if you're really a good quote-unquote person in your respective religious beliefs and denominations, why would you be afraid to connect with God? You know, that just doesn't compute for me. And I know I'm a nerd and I'm trying to be too logical about this, but come on, people, get a clue. So you're really, really connecting with the true you, irrespective of all the static frequency on your radios, right, that you're listening to. Tune in to the one channel inside yourself and start to reconnect with who you really are. Ask yourself why you're doing certain things. Are you doing certain things out of habit? Or if you're afraid of doing certain things, what are you afraid of? Failure? We all fail at some level. Right? Fear is the thing that keeps us all back. It's the thing that holds us all back. It's the thing that keeps us from exploring and accepting different people and different cultures and different races and different sexual orientations or different religious views or spiritual views. I mean, aren't we all after the same doggone thing? Aren't we all trying to survive the best we can without killing each other? Although we don't do a really good job of that, in my personal opinion. And you know, we as a species, and I was saying this to a buddy of mine over the weekend, we as a species really coexist pretty crappily. I mean, if you look at the stuff that we do to our environment and then try to deny it, or the stuff that we do to our fellow animals, and let's not forget, we're still animals. We might be at the quote-unquote top of the food chain as Homo sapiens, but we don't always use our prefrontal lobes in a very efficacious manner. You know, we pollute the environment and think that, you know, our fecal material isn't going to smell, or that we can't muck with Mother Nature forever, and it's not going to bitch smack us by global warming or, you know, radiation poisoning, and we can put all this crap in our food and put it in our bodies, and our body's just going to go, oh yeah, we love all these plastics and poisons you're putting in, all this crappy sugar that we're adding that our bodies are not set up to produce. I mean, come on, people. And if you really believe your body's a temple and given to you as a gift by God or Allah or Yahdhe or whatever, why are you contaminating it with this stuff? I mean, come on. Right? And so the more that you connect with the real you, I think the more you can get at what's going on with you, both from an existential perspective and a mental health perspective and a life perspective in general. You know, why do you do certain things? You know, I asked a lot of Judeo-Christians, you know, why, you know, particularly Catholics and Greek Orthodox and folks who tend to be more formal, who, you know, and I should know because, you know, my folks are Greek Orthodox. So you go into, you know, the church or the synagogue and you light candles. Well, why do you light candles? Why do you light only white candles? Why do you burn certain incense? Why do you do certain chants and walk around the church three times? Why not five times? Do you know any of the answers to those questions? How can you say that you're a quote-unquote good Christian or good whatever and not know the answers to that? Really? That's like saying you're a really good, you know, endocrinologist and you don't know the first thing about hormones. I mean, seriously, think about it. That's really dumb. So knowing yourself, even though it's kind of afraid, for most people it's a, kind of a fear thing and they're afraid and it's a fear factor thing. If you really get down to the core and you strip out all the facade, you're really getting close to your true self, which allows you to listen, if you will. And again, excuse me for being more existential on this podcast. You're getting closer to the voice of reality, God, Allah, the prime mover, whatever the heck you see that thing or things, the vibrations in nature, the true meaning, the light, whatever. You can't get there by consuming a bunch of crap and thinking your body's not going to punish you or that you're not going to contaminate your brain, which is going to misfilter the information. You can't do it by valuing things like power and money over quote-unquote truth. You know, and I'm back to the quote, you know, you can't serve God and mammon too. I mean, and again, this is not a podcast for me to, you know, be biblical on or, you know, Quranish on or anything else. It's just, you know, if you folks really believe what it is you said you believed, you'd know this stuff and you wouldn't have to have me reminding you of it. You know, you wouldn't go gossiping about people. And the thing is, you wouldn't be afraid to look at what it is inside of you and reconnect with that and let that truth, that energy, that light, that awareness flow in you and help to guide you in your day-to-day stuff, and to help you with the fear, and to help you overcome the struggles that you're having, you know, and to help you use that as a backup energy source, if you will, to give you a little added oomph. Now, you know, again, and you folks have heard me say this before, I'm not suggesting you just kind of throw your hands up and go, okay, I'm going to connect with that energy force, and that energy force better get busy, because I'm consuming this box of donuts, and I have an eating disorder, and I want that energy to stop me from eating. Oh, hell no. Don't be a lazy person. You know, give the force, energy, God, Allah, whatever, you know, give them a little help here, okay? You got to get off your butt and work it, you know, and there's plenty of biblical quotes to support everything I'm saying, and I'm going to quit being, you know, Bible spouting on here, because that's not my goal, and I apologize if anybody's felt I was proselytizing, because I'm really not. I'm just trying to say, you know, if you really believe what you say you believe in, there should be no fear in your changing. There should be no fear in asking for guidance. There should be no fear in looking inside yourself and reconnecting with the true you, irrespective of social status, gender, money, you know, political power, you know, fame, glory, or lack thereof. Because basically, if you look at it, the energy light's the same for all of us. I mean, it's really all products of God's word and quote-unquote the children of God or children of the light, or again, however you see that, then there really should be no fear. There really should be nothing, but I want to get to know that thing inside of me better, and how can I let it out more instead of covering it up and running from it? Now, is it painful when you look at that stuff and then you realize all the stuff you've done that's really contrary to what you say you believe? Oh, well, you bet your bippy it is. It's really flipping painful. And most of us beat the crap out of ourselves in the process of doing it. And I can tell you I'm as guilty of that as anybody on the planet, given my compulsive nature. I'm really good at flagellating myself. I wish I could say I wasn't, but I am. But that doesn't stop me from looking at stuff. You're not going to learn anything if you don't look. You're not going to learn anything if you close your mind to what you find. You're not going to learn anything if you continue to go by the precepts and edicts that society gives you. And let's never forget, society's just a bunch of people, kind of like the Council of Nicaea, that got together and said, okay, let's agree that this is good and this is bad and this is right and this is wrong. All right, I'll tell you the same thing I tell my colleagues. There's really no such thing as ethics or morals. There really isn't, because ethics or morals vary according to the age you are, the culture you grew up in, the society you grew up in, the subculture you grew in, the evolution of the earth, the century you grew up in, the country you grew up in, the religion or spiritual belief system or lack thereof you grew up with. It's all relative. And I'm sure that there's some ultimate golden truth out there with a capital T, but my argument is, much like Plato's cave, our brains aren't smart enough to really know what it is all the time. And the best we can do is how we interpret it. And the best we can do is look at ourselves and fix ourselves and figure out how we're going to fix ourselves. Because when we start pointing our fingers at other people and judging other people, which again, I'm very, very sorry to say, I am guilty of that as the next person. That's one of my biggest struggles, is every time I want to look at somebody else and go, oh my God, I can't believe this person's not doing ABC, or this person's saying XYZ, or this person is doing FGH. You know, my hit the ground running response is, Yeah, and you're perfect, and you don't have any faults, and you got nothing but time on your hands to be looking at other people and criticizing them. Why don't you turn the mirror in front of your face and look at you and look at the stuff, what's wrong with you, and let's figure out how we can make it less wrong, how we can use our strengths to help overcome our weaknesses. What can we do to focus on ourselves? Because if you're focused on somebody else, you're not working on yourself. And let's face it, boys and girls, none of us can change another person, period, end of story. Because if I could, I'd be charging a whole lot more money for my services. All I can do is teach people and share with people the truths, quote-unquote, that I know to the best of my ability, but it's up to them to change themselves or not, or to decide what I'm saying is full of sheep dip, or, hey, maybe there's some gems of knowledge in there. Maybe I need to start listening to this guy. Because we're all just travelers on the journey trying to figure this thing out. But we're not going to figure it out beating the heck out of other people. We're not going to figure it out dumbing our senses down with all kinds of drugs, whether the drug is sex and drugs and rock and roll, or whether the drug is sugar and amphetamines and abusing medication when we don't really need it, or using it in ways that was never intended to be used. You know, and thank God that's something I've never done. And I do mean N-E-V-E-R, never. Now, have I ever eaten more sugar than I need? Oh, well, absolutely. As a teenager, I did a lot of bunch of stupid stuff with common, quote-unquote, drugs and food. But I can thankfully say I have never done illicit drugs, ever. Never been drunk, never been stoned, never tried pot, never did any of that stuff. And you folks have heard that jillions of times, so I'm not going to recapitulate it on here. But I was really lucky because that crap ran in my family, and I was a good role model learner watching other people muck their lives up and go, no thanks, I gave it the office. I got it. That shit's just bad. Too dangerous. Thank you. I'm done. But we can't do it by numbing ourselves out to the pain. We have to look at the pain. We have to go through the pain. And if we find things about ourselves we don't like, then go inside. Ask the spirit, the energy, the light, your inner self, go get strength from that enough to face what it is and figure out how to change it, how to make it better. Take a bad trait and make it better, to make a pun on a very famous Beatle lyric. I hope that Lennon and McCartney will forgive me for that one. Yeah, my jokes and puns never get any better, but you folks have learned that already, those of you who have heard these podcasts before. This is really about looking inside yourself. Stop focusing on other cultures and what's wrong with them. Another problem that Americans seem to have more than anybody else. I don't know why we have a problem with that, but boy, we really want to go over there and proselytize and fix other people's political structures and make other people like us. And I don't know, I guess that's part of the human culture trying to make everything, you know, normalize everything so that we don't have anything to be afraid of, because gosh knows when we meet strangers that aren't like us, we tend to respond by fear. That's probably a holdover from caveman days when, you know, things that were not like us could be potentially dangerous and we didn't have a well-developed enough prefrontal lobe to go, okay, I get it. It's you know, it's not going to hurt us, right? So we need to get over that. And we need to, again, look inside ourselves and ask ourselves, why do you hate this person? Why are you afraid of this person? Why are you afraid of yourself? Why are you judging other people when you yourself have plenty of faults that you can sit there and look at and tear apart and rebuild in a much more efficacious way? And when I say tear apart, I don't mean beat the hell out of yourself. I mean, I have friends, and I'm guilty of this too, so I'm not just saying. But I have, you know, friends who their version of working on stuff is looking at all the stuff that they do wrong and beating the crap out of themselves. And I'm like, no, that's not really how this works. What it is looking at what's wrong from an archaeologist's perspective, not from a critical parent who's looking to beat the crap out of their kid. What's wrong? How did it get there? What can I do to fix it right here in the moment? Right? Not how am I going to make up for stuff I did 30 years ago, because there's nothing behind you that you can fix. All you can do is learn from past errors and grow from them and hopefully not make them, at least to the degree and intensity that you did in the past. But you can't be looking at other people and doing this. You can't be looking at yourself and then waiting for applause from other people, right? Because what this also implies is you don't give two flying flips whether other people recognize the good change in you or not. Because you know what? You're not doing it for them. You're doing it for you. Why should you do it for you? Because you're worth it. Because, oh, that's right, did you forget you're really a child of God and a product of God spoke the word? So if you're really a quote-unquote good religious spiritual person of whatever sect or denomination, aren't you going to do it really because it's kind of your responsibility to take the gift that you were given and work it till you can't work it anymore and make the best of it you can as a way of honoring your creator, the source, the prime mover, the force, whatever? I mean, come on. So you don't really care who notices it and who doesn't. And the more you have a I don't give a flip attitude about whether other people see the positive traits that I'm developing or not, the better off you're going to be. Because if you're waiting, as Neil Peart might say, for the world's applause, sometimes you're going to get it and sometimes you're not. And sometimes you're going to get critiques from people that may or may not be true. So, you know, you can't really do that. You do it for you. It's like I tell every person who I work with who's trying to change, oh, you know, I'm going to do it for my wife. I'm going to do it for my boyfriend. I'm going to do it for my kids. I'm going to do it for my whatever. Do it for yourself. And that's really the only person you should ever do anything for. And I don't mean that in a narcissistic, self-aggrandizing kind of way, like, oh, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, so I'm the only guy or gal that matters. I don't mean that. I mean, you do it for you because you're honoring yourself, because you want to be the best person you can possibly be. Not so other people will notice you and pat you on the back. This is not to get accolades from society or anybody in society. In fact, it's just the opposite. You're doing it whether you get the accolades or not, because you don't want the accolades, because you don't give a flip about the accolades, because you're doing it for you and to be the best person you can be in order to honor your creator. And to do that requires courage. It requires constant courage. It's the never-ending process. And that was one of the discussions I had with one of the folks I'm working with. You know, came in and said, hey, I know you said this stuff was going to be hard, but oh my, it is really hard. And it's never-ending. And I said, you know what? You're absolutely right. It doesn't ever end. It gets easier the more you look at it and work on it because you begin to create neural pathways that your brain gets used to looking at stuff because it recognizes that it's not going to melt away or be blown apart by this awareness that you're having. And it gets easier over time. But easier doesn't mean easy. It just means easier. And hopefully your fear factor will diminish as you slow look at your stuff and you go, wait a minute. You know, I can work on this without it obliterating me. I can do this without it, you know, overwhelming me if I take it in small dosages and take it stepwise. You know, you don't want to do this thing all in one day. It's, you know, the Rome wasn't built in a day thing. You know, it's like going into the gym, having never worked out, and you're like, well, I'm going to run on the treadmill for 4 hours. I'm going to ramp this thing up as fast as it'll go. No, you're going to kill yourself. This has got to be done in small doses, stepwise progression, just like anything else in life, whether it's learning to walk, learning to play guitar, learning to be a good accountant or engineer, or anything. It requires stepwise, programmed practice all the time. And the more you practice, the better at it you get. Why do you think these guys that must be, I mean, I really don't know how old they are, because it just amazes me how certain groups of folks age, and you just look at them and you go, you're how old? But even folks that you see with the big, you know, with the gray hair and the flowing beards or the guys or whatever, and they look like they're, you know, 99 years old out there doing Tai Chi or, you know, or Wushu or, you know, going through these katas, and you're like, how the hell are you doing that stuff? Right? Why are you still practicing it? You know, you're a fifth degree black belt or you're a whatever. Well, they're practicing it because they keep getting better, and they don't want to lose it. I mean, this is no different from that mentality. This is a lifelong pursuit. You don't stop because you never arrive. None of us are ever going to be as self-aware as we could be. And you're only going to be as self-aware as you work on it, and as you work on it smartly. And take it stepwise in a very empirical fashion, just as a scientist might be doing on a research project that he or she's working on, or excavating an archaeological dig, or working on a philosophical hypothesis. This has to be done slowly and carefully, but it has to be done, and it has to be done constantly. And you can't escape and avoid it by doing things that are going to be counterintuitive or contradictory to your goals, like getting high, like getting drunk, like polluting your body with all kinds of crap in your food, which are going to clog your brain's abilities and decrease your ability to perceive the truth even if you see it. Right? Which is one reason why, and I promise this will be the last one of these references I do, is why you see in the so-called lost Gospels of Jesus, you see over and over, you see, he who has ears to hear, come near. He who has eyes to see, look. Right? That means you got to be open to it, and you got to have the equipment, the cognitive and mental and emotional and analytical ability to do that stuff. And you can't do it if you're feeding your body with crap, garbage in, garbage out. And you can't do it if you're spending all your time not looking at it. This is a learned skill that gets better with time. So stop waiting for people to acknowledge your stuff. Stop waiting for people to, quote unquote, get you to look at your stuff or get you to change. Change because you want to change. Get better because you want to get better. Become more self-aware because you want to be self-aware. And look at this because you want to get better at who you are, as honoring whatever it is you see as the prime force that drives the rest of this universe, or forces, or whatever. And that you want to honor that thing by being the best you can be. And so that you can also, in a way, interact with people more effectively so that you're not stepping on somebody else's stuff. And because, you know, going back to the psychology literature, a lot of your psychology people, including folks like Adler, famous folks, you know, have said one of the hallmarks of a healthy person is somebody who tries to become all they can be, the so-called self-actualized person, without stepping on somebody else's toes to do likewise. Right? And so you're not inhibiting somebody else's self-evolution. You're not holding them back. You're not doing it in competition with them. You're not doing it to their detriment. You're doing it in a way that you become healthy and allows them to also become healthy. It's the best of both worlds. But you're not waiting for them, and you're not waiting for their approval, and you're not waiting for their applause. You're doing it because you feel good inside. That's your reward. Not, oh, gee, I might live longer because my stress level will go down ultimately. Well, yeah, you might. But you're really doing it for the sake of doing it because you're honoring the God within, the light within, the spirit, your true self. And the more you do that, the easier insights become. I can tell you from a guy who's been doing it a long time. And I'm by certainly no means an enlightened individual or anything else, but I'm a lot further down the pike than I was 25 or 30 years ago. So I don't want about anyone to mishear what I'm saying. But it gets easier with time, but it's never easy. And sometimes you realize stuff comes into your awareness that you wonder how you didn't become aware of earlier, and then you feel all embarrassed and ashamed and dumb. And sometimes the insights that you get are very hurtful because you realize some of the stuff you've done, both to yourself and other people, that you're just hugely ashamed of and embarrassed by. Well, okay. You know, I go back, oh, I promised I wouldn't do it. Okay, I lied. So I go back to the parable of, you know, Jesus with the woman, you know, they're going to stone her. And he goes, okay, he who is without sin, cast the first stone. Well, those of us who are without psychopathology, those of us who are without regrets, those of us who are without mistakes, there ain't no such animal because we're all human. That's what it means to be human. It's not an excuse to mess up, but it's also an acknowledgement that we're never going to be perfect. So we just do the best we can. But we do the best we can with as much awareness as we can, which requires this looking at ourselves, introspection, which requires a structured daily routine of looking at yourself and asking yourself the question, why? Why did I do that? Why did I respond to that? Why do I do certain things in ritual form when I go to church or synagogue or temple? Why do I even go? Or why do I not go? Or what do I really believe in? And why do I believe it? You know, it's kind of like folks who were in abusive relationships for a long time where they're in controlling partners and they come out of the relationship, or they're in one of these so-called cult groups and they come out and they go, I don't know what I really like because I was never allowed to think about it. Well, you know what? Society is not that much different. I know that's a stretch, and I don't mean to over-pathologize society in general, but, you know, it really is, it's much more of an insidious programming. Yeah, and I will leave everybody with this one last thought, because I think this is another, hey, gee, I wonder why question that I sometimes ask myself. So have you ever wondered, For those of you who are TV freaks and movie freaks, like myself, I'm a movie person. Have you noticed the trend for the huge amount of increase and proliferation of zombie TV shows, zombie movies, over the last 5 to 6 to 7 years? Well, I'll give you the punchline and tell you why I, and this is just one man's opinion. Please do not pull out the stone tablets and start going to town here. This is just one guy's, hey, have you ever thought that maybe it's because of this? Something for you to start thinking on, something for you to ask yourself, I wonder why. This is an example of the wonder whys, right? Well, my theory is because we as a society are becoming a bunch of zombies. We're the walking dead. We do things out of routine and out of habit. We pollute our brains so that we really can't think that well with all the additive crap and the chemicals in our food that the FDA seems to allow in because they're being paid off by all these, sometimes they're being paid off by lobbyists who are lobbying. They don't, maybe they don't even know they're being, you know, fooled by the lobbyist. I'm not suggesting they're taking money under the table. I'm saying lobbyists are paid to, you know, keep the FDA off some people's butts. And I mean, you know, it happens all the time. I'm not accusing them of illegal action. I'm just saying that's a lobbyist's job, is convince people to vote a certain way, whether it's in Senate, Congress, or whatever. And so, you know, why does the government, or, you know, not just the, why does the government, state, local, national, whatever, allow all this crap to go into our food? Why does the government allow people to continue to do things that are polluting our environment and then make all these crazy excuses as to why they're doing it, right? Have you ever thought about that? And if we do all that stuff, aren't we really numbing our brains down so that we can't think? Aren't we becoming walking zombies, walking dead, reacting to society's rules, whether the society's rules are religious or political or culturally, aren't we just basically walking, doing the motions, right? We have calculators in our schools now. We're not required to know math tables or any kind of stuff like that. Kids are bringing calculators into math class, really? So you're allowing your brains to now deteriorate because you're not using them. You're not using your neural pathways. And that which doesn't get used kind of deteriorates, which is why you see these, you know, geriatrics type folks, and I'm not slamming them, I'm describing them, you know, Asian guys out there doing all this, you know, martial arts stuff. They're not doing it because they look good. they're not doing it to be fashionable, right? And if you don't use it, you lose it. And that's true of whether you're a basketball player or whether you're a thinker, right? And you can't use it if you're polluting it. Whether the pollution is with escape avoidance, things like strip clubs, and I'm not slamming strip clubs per se, you know, or too much TV or too much of anything. Because, you know, again, moderation. You can't be thinking about this stuff all the time either. You drive yourself crazy. Everything in moderation, right? Balance. It's a complicated issue, but my basic thesis is we are basically walking zombies and our subconscious is going, yeah, it's kind of cool. We can see ourselves on TV and detach from the reality of what it really is, and that's why I love all these zombie movies. And I'm really not kidding. That really is my thesis. My thesis is we are subconsciously the walking dead. And so we're attracted. Like usually attracts like, right? So just saying, you know, personally, I like vampires, but that's probably because of my sleep disorder, you know, and the fascination of living forever, which would be a great fantasy, but particularly if you didn't age and you didn't get decrepit, right? It's not cool living forever if you're hooked up to a heart-lung machine sitting in a wheelchair going, not knowing what your name is, you know. So we all have our little fantasies, but, you know, and I like zombie movies, don't mishear me, but look at how many of them we have and how popular they are. Right? And my argument is because we're all basically becoming a society of zombies. The government tells us something, we believe it. The FDA tells us something, we believe it. Our schools say something, we believe it. Our so-called religious leaders tell us something, we believe it, even if it's a misinterpretation. Right? They sure did the Council of Nicaea. So, you know, all I'm saying is use your brains. Think. Do not avoid thinking. And when you're really thinking about stuff, ask for guidance. Look inside yourself. Try to get to the purity inside yourself instead of distancing yourself from yourself. Because, again, if you really are a devoutly spiritual slash and or religious person, that's not going to be a fearful activity for you. So I hope that helped, folks. I apologize if folks heard me as proselytizing, because I do not intend to do that. As most of you know, I'm pretty spiritual, existential, but I am not very religious for many reasons, which are beyond the scope and purpose of this podcast. All I'm saying is stop being zombies, stop contaminating your brain, and stop being afraid to look at yourself and reconnect with the true you. You can find pretty much anything you want if you clear out the clutter and get to the core and ask yourself some basic questions. Do I really believe this? Why do I believe this? Or why do I not believe this? And how true is my belief system when I really think about it and when I test it out to the reality that I can know as much as I possibly can as a human being? Because we're also pretty limited in that regard. Anyway, I hope you will live your life with courage and not fear. And even though courageous people are afraid, never forget that courage does not mean lack of fear. It just means you do it anyway because you know it's good for you, even though you might be scared witless doing it. And that's my definition of a hero. Somebody who has the courage to do what's right, despite the fact that he or she might be scared, they do it anyway. Every one of you has the potential to be heroes. Don't give up your power. That's part of the power I speak about on these podcasts. Don't give up your power. Take it back. Reclaim it. And in doing so, overcome your own fears and be your own hero. You don't have to look far for heroes. Thanks. See you next time.